We got to address the suburban women problem because it's real.
Suburban women helped determine the 2020 election, but there's more to us than the headlines would have you believe.
The suburbs aren't a homogenous sea of white people in perfect houses. Real change is happening in the suburbs, and we have things to say.
When women share their personal stories, walls come down and barriers are broken.
Welcome to the Suburban Women Problem, a podcast from Red, Wine, and Blue.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. I'm Jasmine Clark.
I'm Amanda Weinstein.
I'm Rachel Vindman.
And this is the Suburban Women Problem. Welcome back and thank you for joining us. It's been pretty amazing that because of technology, we can connect with you and with people all across the country without ever having met them in real life. It's the same with social media. It can be toxic and we have to deal with trolls and misinformation, but it also gives us the opportunity to hear other people's stories and to find our people or find our community. Later on in the podcast, Julie Womack will join us. Julie is the head organizer for Red, Wine, and Blue, and she'll talk about the simple power of talking to your friends about politics and how we can actually use social media to create change. And then after that, I get to chat with Sharon McMahon, who's built a huge community around her Instagram account, Sharon Says So, where she educates people about history and the government. So can social media be a force for good? What is social media even for if it's not to cancel right-wing politicians? No, I'm just kidding about that part. But Rachel, you are seriously Twitter's sweetheart and the queen of snark. I love following you on Twitter. Do you think these platforms are helping or hurting discourse in America?
Gosh, I think about that a lot. Overall, I think the platforms are good if we use them for good. And the snarkiness that I use, I reflect on it quite a bit. You know, when's the best time to use snark and when should I not? I use a lot of snark in my real life just to survive. It's my personality. It's my coping mechanism. But of course, there are times when snark isn't appropriate. But then there are other times when it's an effective way to communicate because, you know, not everything deserves a serious response because it's not a serious question. And to elevate it to that level is kind of giving it more legitimacy than it deserves. But, you know, what I would say to people is be authentic on Twitter, be authentic in other ways. Last week, a person that I follow, she lost her daughter several months ago, and she posted a question, do people not want others to be authentic on Twitter, on social media? Because she's been really open about the pain of losing her child, who is about my daughter's age. And, you know, it makes me sad that someone can't be authentic because I've gotten a lot from meeting people, from, you know, engaging with people. And way back when we lost our daughter, I had a blog. I had a blog about our infertility treatment, and others did too. And I gained a lot of strength from that, a lot of a sense of community because no one in my real life was going through those things. So, you know, that's what I said to Kate about what she was going through was be your real self. And if people don't like it, as Connie Schultz says, block them. You don't need them in your life. But if you find a community here and you find a community of like-minded people, I say lean in, and it's a net positive for sure.
I find it, for me, and I think my personality can be hard to be authentic about my family and about myself, that I can easily share my opinions about the news, about economics, but I tend just naturally to share about my family. I find it to be hard. So I actually have a colleague that does research on kind of sharenting, which is kind of sharing about your kids and things you're going through and, you know, the positives and negatives with that. And so I think about when I post about my kids too, right? They don't have this choice. Should I do it? And so I have this kind of inner turmoil about it. But I want my friends and family to see my kids because they love those kids. And I have friends and family that are far away. And I want them to be able to share in, you know, the experiences that my kids are going through. But I think there have been times, you were mentioning how, you know, someone on Twitter lost their daughter. where you have no choice to because you just need that lifeline. And so my family, it's actually my niece died about 2 years ago. And it was just like this lifeline for me of like, I have to share this. Like, I have to tell you what my family is going through. Like, you won't understand anything else about me right now if you don't understand my family's going through it. And I kind of just put it out there because I needed to. And I really kind of think I discounted how much I did need other people to kind of share in this with me. But seeing my friends and family step up and how can I help? What can I do? And they were stationed in Hawaii because she's in the Army. And I couldn't be there. I couldn't go to them when they needed me. But through our military family, I had military contacts there that said, I will make them dinner tonight. I will do this and that. And it was amazing to see how much social media could pull people together in a time when my family was like probably the most vulnerable we have ever been in our lives. And so that was really amazing to see. And to see the good, and I really love on social media when I can connect with people, even from high school, that maybe we were acquaintances, but not good friends. But I love that I can connect with people on a lot of different things, from shelter dogs to economics. And I find, especially on Twitter, I can connect with economists from around the country and around the world that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to connect with and interact with. And when economics is such a male-dominated field, I don't often hear women's voices and women's opinions, but we have research that shows, you know, female economists think differently. We have different policies. And so for me, it's been really important to be able to hear other women in economics, especially women of color who are especially underrepresented, to hear their voices. And so one thing I try to do is to amplify those voices whenever I can, is I follow every female economist I can. I try and share the good work they're doing that should be amplified more.
You know, I like that we can still connect with people. I think it's a really positive thing, a positive place to use social media. I've done it. I've lived overseas and felt super alone. There's nothing worse than feeling alone, especially when you're a part of a group, if you will. When people reach out to someone, it's just like there's a need.
Rachel, you make a good point when you talk about being alone. I think that there are a lot of people that don't really have that community for whatever reason. But then you have people who had community who may not have necessarily felt alone until COVID happened. And then all of a sudden, they were alone. They were isolated. And social media was pretty much the only way they were able to reach out to the people that used to be a part of their community. They couldn't see them. They couldn't touch them. They couldn't hug them. But they could at least reach out to them on social media. And so I think that also is something that that was a good, that's a positive. And I think about this in the context of the 1918 flu, which is a pandemic very similar to this one, except they didn't have social media. And I wonder just how they were able to get through, you know, the isolation.
So Jasmine, I know with your constituents that you have, like, social media is one way that you communicate with them. So have you had any interesting conversations with your constituents over social media?
Absolutely. In fact, I've been very interested in what gets a lot of reactions and what doesn't when it comes to social media. But it has also helped me to realize what's important to people. So for example, the other day I posted a post about affordable housing and I got a lot of responses on that post. So this is something that is on people's minds. It was on my mind that day. You know, so many people reacted and shared because they're like, yes, you get it. You're talking about the things that we care about. And so social media really does give me an opportunity to connect with my constituents, but it also makes my constituents feel like they know me a little bit to the point where if they see me in person in public, they feel like they can walk up to me and start a conversation with me because they're like, yeah, no, I follow you. I know all about your TED talk the other day, or I know that you did this or you did that. And so they're following what I'm doing. They're following the conversations that I'm having and they feel connected enough with me to actually talk to me in person. So social media has been amazing for me. It also sometimes allows people to reach me when they can't reach me through other means, they see me and they're like, I can send you a message right here. And that's easier than trying to navigate all the different websites to try to figure out how to email their representative.
Yeah, my husband uses social media to get a pulse point on his constituents. He uses it a lot to interact with them. He will use it to inform them on bills coming up, and he uses it to get their opinion on those bills. How does it affect you? How does it affect your family? What do you think about this legislation? Jasmine, you're talking about how your constituents get to know you better, right? We want to feel like we know our legislators, and it's a really good way for us to get to know our legislators and to be comfortable reaching out to them. And so my husband's staff actually had me start a Twitter account. I wasn't on Twitter before because his campaign staff was like, look, you need to get on Twitter. You need to get on Instagram because people need to feel like they know your family. You need to be authentic and you need to be able to share about your family and your life so people know you. And especially as, you know, a military family who isn't from Ohio, like they need to get to know us and who we are because we weren't born and raised here and have those contacts. So we need to share who we are.
Last week, we were in the Olympic Rainforest, the Olympic National Park and the Ho Rainforest, and we stopped at this place. It was like the only place we could stop for something to eat. And this woman, like, she was talking on her phone and she hung up and she was like, oh my gosh, I follow both of you. And she actually knew more about me than she did about Alex because I'm more personal. He's keeping it all close for the book. But it was great. We had such a great conversation. And it was, like Jasmine said, very much like people just feel like they know you and they feel like, you know, they can have a conversation with you. And I actually really love it. And Alex does too. It's a way, I mean, this person lives in Seattle and we live in Washington, D.C. So there is power in this place of social media. And, you know, I think it's just wonderful to meet people in real life.
So let's talk to another mom who's an expert in using social media for good. Julie Womack is the organizing director of Red, Wine, and Blue, and she's all about connecting women to each other to make a difference in the world. Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So Julie, I hear that like a lot of suburban women, you didn't really get involved politically until the 2016 election. Could you tell us a little bit about your journey from there to your current role with Red, Wine, and Blue?
Sure. I think before 2016 happened, I always joke that I was like the stereotype of a suburban mom. Like I practiced law for 10 years. I was a prosecutor. I actually prosecuted cases against violence against women and children. And then my husband got a job and we had to move out of our city. And so I was going somewhere where I knew nobody, I had no legal connections. I had just had my second child. So I was like, you know what, this is a good time maybe to try the stay-at-home mom thing. And then 2016 happened. And I think like so many women I've met now and talked to, it was just a what the hell just happened moment for me that I couldn't believe that, you know, we had elected this man president. So it was just a wake-up call that I needed to do more. Like, I just couldn't sit on the sidelines anymore. I needed to become involved. And that led me to actually finding a group in my community that had started an online Facebook group of people who felt very similar to myself that I had no idea lived in my community, because where I live is very red and you feel very, very alone if you have any type of like more progressive or liberal-leaning views. And I reached out to the woman who had started it as like to offering to help. And at first, her name is Amy. Amy wrote back and she was like, oh, thank you. I'm good. I think I got this. And then a couple weeks later, she wrote me back and she's like, oh my goodness. No, I know. I don't got this. Like there are hundreds. We were getting all these people joining. And then that led us to realizing that we had a lot of people in our community who actually felt like us and we actually had a lot of power. And it led us to start organizing other groups where we could be more vocal and make it be okay for people where we live to come out and say like, yes, I'm a progressive. Yes, I'm a Democrat. Yes, I vote left leaning. So we formed a political action committee here to support statewide and local candidates. We actually launched a Democrat club in our city just to let people know, like I said, we're loud and proud. We're here. It's okay. And that involvement led me to meet Katie Paris, who started Red, Wine, and Blue, because she was kind of traveling the state of Ohio Because it turns out there were a whole lot of women like me who got really mad after 2016 and started groups just like mine.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that in my community where we had a lot of women who were upset about 2016, but my community tends to lean red. And so we couldn't necessarily see it. Might not be our neighbors that were like us. And so social media and the red, white, and blue was a way for us to connect with each other and say, oh, you're in my community. And you think like I do. Oh, and you're in my community. You also think like I do. You're also upset about what happened in the 2016 election. So yeah, a lot of what they've done with Red, White, and Blue, I've seen in my community, was a place for women to connect where they felt like, am I the only one that is upset right now?
Yeah, I have to laugh. Actually, we always have jokes that once we started our local Facebook group, we would run into somebody in the gym or something and be like, oh, you're in our group too? I had no idea. Like, it was like this little secret society that formed of like people who were, you know, finding each other for the first time. And like I said, where I live is just so red that you really did feel alone. So when we started finding people joining this group and them inviting their friends to join, it was just like, oh my gosh, there are so many people that feel like me. So it was just, it was inspiring. It was empowering. And I think that is really, social media can have so many negatives, but man, can it have so many positives in terms of bringing people together.
So why did you use social media? What power do you think you're tapping into with social media that you don't use in like a more traditional organizing situation?
Well, I mean, I think no matter whether it's traditional or digital, like online organizing, I mean, the goal is the same, right? You're connecting people with shared values. You're bringing people together. You're making a human connection and with people who think like you, feel like you, believe like you, and getting them motivated to do something together, collective action, and to do something to support what they care about. I think the hang up traditionally, though, is, you know, someone's got to find your organization, and then they have to be invited, and they have to be willing to come to an event. I think social media just makes it such a lower barrier of entry, right? You go where people already are. Everybody, for the most part, is on social media, right? Everybody in my social circles has a Facebook account. My kids might laugh at that because they think Facebook is for old people, but you know, Instagram, whatever it may be, almost the majority of the people we're trying to reach are on social media. And so there's this low barrier to entry. All you have to do is click join to become part of a group. You don't have to go to a meeting. You don't have to attend an event or do anything special. And once you get into that group, you just start to make those connections. You have conversations. You see what other people are doing. It's not only do you kind of make these connections online, you know, across the media, but you see other people doing things and it inspires you. I've had so many amazing stories come out of our Facebook group of women who never in a million years would do something even as simple as putting up a yard sign. Like I said, like in my community, you know, you're scared to put up a yard sign because you're going to be branded a certain way. And I had women, you know, in our Facebook group saying, I saw so many of you who were scared to put up a yard sign and you did it. So it gave me like the power to do that. And they were putting up Biden signs or doing something in their community, being inspired. I've even seen women who were like, I never thought about running for office before, but I've seen other women here who are stepping up. I mean, there's just so many ways to be empowered and inspired online because you're just making connections with people from, you know, our group is national, so people from across the country.
I definitely agree with that. And I definitely agree that, and this is what we've been talking about, how social media can be a powerful tool. It can be a great tool for organizing and getting people together. We just have to be careful and mindful of the negative ways that social media can be used. But I really like what Red, Wine, and Blue has done since 2016. I think that's very important. And so with that, Julie, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today and telling us more about Red, Wine, and Blue and how you all use social media to connect with people and create positive change. So that's what we need.
Thank you. It was really great to talk to you guys.
After this is my interview with Sharon McMahon, a social media star who runs classes on Instagram called Government for Grownups. That interview coming up after the break.
Are you tired of right-wing attacks on education? Head over to redwine.blue and use our action tool to write to your local officials in support of an accurate and honest education about race. With just a few clicks, you can send a letter to both your state representative and your senator. And while you're there, why not sign up for Red, Wine, and Blue's weekly newsletter, The Cul-de-Sac? It has ways to get involved, an advice column for those sticky political situations, and more. Visit redwine.blue to join the party today.
Our guest today is a teacher and social media star who runs classes on Instagram that she calls Government for Grownups. She's been called America's government teacher, and we're so excited to have her with us today. Sharon McMahon, welcome to the Suburban Women Problem.
Yay! Thank you for having me.
So, I know you've been interested in civics and government since a very young age, but usually constitutional law is not necessarily the most popular subject with kids. So, what was it about government that captured your interest so early?
You know, I used to have a paper route, and I would deliver the papers in the freezing cold dark of the Minnesota mornings, and it was boring. You know, like I didn't have a phone. And so I would, you know, just kind of real casually read the newspapers while I was delivering them and, you know, try to do it in a way where I wasn't disturbing the newspaper too much, where somebody would complain like somebody's read my newspaper. So, you know, I think some of it had to do with that I just started reading the newspaper out of boredom every morning while I was walking on my paper route. And there was just something about it that, you know, there's almost that element of, you ask a little kid, if you were president for a day, what would you do? You know what I'm talking about? Where we think that a president is like a king and they have some kind of magical power and they'll give everybody like a bag of gold or, you know, whatever it is. I think maybe there was that little bit of that element of mystery to me. Like, what is even possible?
I love that. It's a very good start to that story. So your Instagram account, Sharon Says So, teaches people about the government and the law, along with combating misinformation. I love you. Can you tell us more about the approach you take to teaching people about government?
My approach is to be straightforward, approachable, and succinct. And I do my very best to subtract all of the spin, all of the conjecture, all of the hearsay out of what is happening in the world. And I think people are weary. They're weary of being told what to think all the time. You know, like turn on cable channel one and you're going to be told the 25 terrible things about XYZ candidate or leader. Turn on cable channel two and you're going to get 25 things that say the exact opposite of everything that cable channel one said. And it's frankly exhausting. Most people don't feel like they want to devote mental energy, nor do they have the time. They have children, they have jobs, they have lives. Like, I don't have 3 hours a day to sit to watch all these stories and sift through all this and be like, well, I've determined the facts of a story I heard 9 hours ago. You know what I mean? They just don't have time for that. But they do want to be informed. And they do want to know what the facts are so they can form their own opinions, well-educated opinions.
I love that. Can we borrow you for schools as well? So you have over 600,000 followers on Instagram. They actually call themselves governerds. And so with that many followers, clearly you're doing something right. So why do you think your account has resonated with so many people?
This is something that has been surprising to me, is I did not, because I am somebody who spent literally my whole life learning about these things, studying these things. I'm married to a political science professor, you know, like this is very second nature to me. I guess maybe I didn't realize how much anxiety government and politics produces for the average person. I didn't realize how much confusion it produces. I didn't realize the amount of exhaustion that people feel surrounding this topic, because that's not my lived experience. But when I was, you know, when I started doing this, that was what I kept hearing over and over and over. Like, this, your account has brought me peace. Your account has brought me clarity. I don't know how to, you know, adequately convey how, being relieved of some of this anxiety has affected, you know, my entire outlook. So I think that is part of it. I mean, there's other reasons too, but I do think the extreme polarization that we're experiencing produces very negative mental health effects, and it produces tons of anxiety. And then when we're experiencing that amount of anxiety, we seek to avoid it, right? Like, we want out of that anxiety producing environment. And so it causes people sometimes to just check out of caring about government, caring about politics, when in fact they are caring people. They are caring people, and they do want their communities to be better, and they do want to raise children who care about their world, but yet they also have to protect their own mental health. So my hope is that people will feel educated, but they will also, that it will also subtract some of that, those negative feelings of anxiety and confusion that they feel when they visit a cable news network.
I can definitely understand that. I think people crave information, but then sometimes, you know, when you're trying to seek information, it's like information overload. And mm-hmm. then you're like, you know what? No more, no more. I don't, mm-hmm. this is too much. Or I am more confused now than I was before you told me.
Yes.
And so yes. I think what you're offering people, like you said, is that piece of like, I'm not trying to confuse you. I'm just trying to inform you. Mm-hmm. Combating misinformation is so important to us here on the podcast. And it's something that Red, Wine, and Blue, the organization that produces this show, works hard at every day. Do you have any stories of people who have come to you that said that they believed in QAnon or that they believed in other conspiracies until they found Government for Grownups?
I have had people come to me and say that before, and it was surprising to me because I know the psychology behind people who are deeply involved in those kinds of things, and it is a very difficult thing to extricate somebody from. And frankly, they have to want to engage with other information. You know, like it's a little bit like having a family member that you care about that is an addict. You can offer them resources, but they do have to want to get better on their own. You can't force them to. So in some ways, the psychology behind it is very similar to that. They have to be willing to seek information in order to be able to, you know, exit that kind of scenario. But I do think, well, I know I've had a number of people contact me to be like, I didn't even realize that what I believed was part of a greater conspiracy. I didn't even realize that when I thought X, that where that was coming from. And then when I heard you talk about it, or I saw you, you know, post about X, Y, or Z thing, I didn't even realize. And now that you're saying that, it makes complete sense. And several people have come to me and said, you know, I think I've talked to maybe 10 or 12 people who have had that experience where they were like, I didn't even realize that that's what that was. And I don't want to be a part of that.
So what would you say works? So how do you approach these conversations where someone is like, you know, I actually really did believe this stuff. And now, after finding Government for Grownups, you're kind of opening my eyes to something. But like, is it a lot of pressure, or like, what works to actually pull someone out?
It's tricky, right? Like, if we could just be like, that is wrong, and then they stopped believing it, like, that would be fantastic. If we could just be like, nope, that's not true, and then they suddenly agreed with you, and you're like, you're right, you've led me to the water, and now I'll drink it, you know? One of the things that I have found, I've done a lot of interviews with people who are experts in psychology, or people who are experts in this, you know, in this field. One of the things that they have said over and over is that the more strongly you criticize and pressure somebody about their belief system, the deeper it will drive those beliefs into their core. High pressure, high criticism is not effective in this scenario. It just drives it deeper in. So I view it more as a, you know, I will be happy to stand here at the edge of the pool waiting for you. And if you would like a hand out of the water, I'd be happy to give you one. But if I jump in the water and begin just like splashing water in the other person's face, telling them, why are you so stupid to be in this pool? What they're going to swim away from me, right? You know, like they're right. not going to. Yes,
I would swim away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a little too aggressive. And I will say that as somebody who cares deeply about facts, as somebody who naturally, my natural temperament is to be like, I'm going to be a logic bully in the to use the phrase of my friend Adam Grant, I'm going to be a logic bully. That's my natural inclination, is to be like, here are the 26 reasons why what you're saying is wrong. So I am not coming from the position of high horse of like, I'm the enlightened one and the rest of y'all are doing it wrong. This is just information that I have learned from other experts who actually know about these things. And you also can't use logic and rationality with somebody who is not making decisions based on logic and rationality, right? It's why trying to argue with your three-year-old who wants the blue sippy cup and not the red, why using logic doesn't work.
I love that. I love that. I'm in politics as well. And I got into politics by way of science. So I am also one of those people that's like logic, facts, evidence, research, data. And then over time, very quickly, actually wasn't that much time, I realized that I kind of had to get out of that.
Yes.
In certain situations where I am trying to get someone to understand something that is logical, but I'm not going to reach them through that path. And so you have to find different paths. So I completely understand what you're saying. What have you found is like the most rewarding thing about being on social media? And what has been most frustrating about being a social media influencer?
The most rewarding thing is, well, there's two things. One is something bigger than myself, which is feeling like I am impacting the world for good. Like that I am able to inspire other people. Like, why don't we go do this good thing together? You know, like that's very, very, very gratifying. And I always say that giving is revolutionary to the giver. It's not just impactful to the recipient, that being a giver changes you. And it's kind of like when you have children that are excited about their birthday or a holiday and they get a bunch of gifts, like the joy you feel as a parent watching them open those presents, like it impacts you as the giver. So that is part of it. I absolutely love feeling like governors are making a difference in the world for good. That is so meaningful to me. And the other part of it is feeling like, and I think a lot of adults can relate to this, like it's difficult to find your people. It's difficult to find your community. We're often just, we know people from work, we know people from church, we know people from wherever. But when you are following somebody's social media platform, it's because they truly have self-selected to be there and they relate to you in some way. And so feeling like I have finally found all my people, you know, like they're all here in one location. We all have similar, we have different viewpoints, but we have similar goals of like, let's change the world for the better. Let's have some laughs. Let's learn stuff. We all love to learn stuff. I love feeling like I found my people. So those are my two, you know, two of my biggest things that I appreciate the most about it. Of course, the most challenging thing I think anybody with a high visibility job will tell you is the incoming flack and criticism. It can be challenging to deal with, but it's an unavoidable part of the job. It really is. And somebody told me recently that, you know, like this term, this military term of catching flack. And I was like, I know what flack is, but I had never really related it to a military term, which is about enemy or enemy fire, essentially. That the closer you get to your target, the more flack you're going to catch. Like, as you get closer to what it is that they don't want you to do, you know, like the incoming amount of fire is going to increase dramatically. If you're over there just eating some scrambled eggs, like that's not that interesting to them. You know what I mean? Like, it's when you start doing something that they're like, oh no, I don't like that. You're getting too close to the target. You catch more flack. So this person was trying to say it in an encouraging way, like the more flack, incoming flack, the bigger difference you are making.
I love that. Now, I'm going to use that more often.
Do it.
When I feel like I'm starting to get attacked, I'm like, you know what?
Yep.
This just means I'm getting closer to my target.
That's right.
All right. So now we're going to jump into the rapid fire questions portion. First question. Your students on the East Coast loved your Minnesota accent. What's a great word or phrase to say with a Minnesota accent?
Well, the classic is ufda, ufda, which is spelled U-F-F-D-A. And it is actually a Norwegian word that, you know, like Minnesota was settled by Scandinavians in the 1800s. It's a Norwegian word that means essentially, it's loosely translated as like, dang, like, ofta, it is cold out there. Ofta.
I love it. All right. I've heard you say you're born a teacher. You taught a cooking class to your younger sister at 10 years old, even though you didn't know how to cook yourself. So what's the most unusual subject you've ever taught a class about?
Well, going back to trying to force my sisters to learn stuff from me, which they were very resistant to, I did prepare a large unit about first aid, in which I checked out first aid books from the library, like aggregated all the information, made posters about things like applying a tourniquet. When my sister was like 4 years old, you know, like she has never, not gonna apply a tourniquet. She's four.
Right. In addition to government and teaching, you're also passionate about wildlife and whales in particular. So do you have any cool whale facts that you want to surprise us with?
So, you know, we all know that whales are the largest creatures on Earth, and they, of course, are, you know, weigh hundreds of thousands of pounds in some cases. And a blue whale's heart is large enough for an adult man to stand inside of.
That is actually really interesting. All right, so you have a series on Instagram about historical insults from some of our founding fathers. So what's your favorite historical insult?
You know, one of the things that made me crack up when I was reading about it are some of Abraham Lincoln's opponents who referred to him in a very derogatory manner as being high cheekboned and long legged. Like, oh no, that's the worst thing you have to say about me. Like, that's a supermodel, is like high cheekboned and long legged.
I love it. I love it. All right. Well, that's all of our rapid fire questions. Thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you and find your work?
Oh, that's so nice. My Instagram account is @SharonSaysSo. And my website, where you can register for my workshops and things like that, is SharonMcMahon.com. If you visit my Instagram profile, you'll find how to spell my last name.
Perfect. Well, it was such a pleasure having you.
Oh, thank you
again for joining us on the Suburban Women Problem.
It's truly my pleasure.
Welcome back, everyone. My friends are very excited to listen to that interview, Jasmine, and it was a great one. I think everyone can learn a lot from Sharon and her very approachable way of teaching us about government and history.
Yes, It was such a good interview. I really enjoyed talking to her, and I resonated so much with her when she just talked about like just trying to get information out there, giving it to people in a digestible manner so that they can just get it. And so I really liked talking to her. It was fun. All right. So now we go to the portion of our show where we do our toast to joy, where we talk about something great that has happened in our week. And so I'm going to start with you, Rachel. What's your toast to joy this week?
Well, keeping with the theme of social media, I have two situations I'd like to recognize. One is someone who reminded me a few days ago that based on something I retweeted of someone else, they made the decision to become sober. And a few days ago, they celebrated their 3-month anniversary of sobriety. And it's just such a joy that they reach out to me and celebrate it with me, share it with me so that I can celebrate with them, I should say. It's an honor and a privilege and such a tremendous use of social media. It's wonderful. And the other situation is a mom, military spouse, who her son was just recently diagnosed with leukemia. You know, the response, she shared it with it on social media, and to see people rallying around their family and supporting their family is such a beautiful thing. And I think it's also a great use of social media. So I'd like to give a shout out to Kelly and Nate. That's Nate the Great is her son, and you can just search the hashtag Nate the Great, I think, on Twitter if you want to read about their family. But we're cheering for you, Nate. We're praying for you, and I love to see the support that you are getting on Twitter.
So my toast of joy also is kind of thinking of the social media theme, and I was thinking my toast of joy is to the conversation. So I, as an economist, and I think most economists, we love to argue, great quality and also bad quality. But I do appreciate when people are willing to argue with me on social media, because I can usually come to a perspective I didn't have before. And I actually love the back and forth. I love when people disagree with me. I think it is fun to find out a different perspective, what that person's thinking. And also, I love to figure out ways where, even if I still think I'm right, which is probably most of the time, that I can come at the same topic or the same issue or the same policy in a different way that reaches more people because this person has a different perspective about it. So my toast of joy is to the conversation and for everyone out there that is willing to argue with me, because I do actually really like it.
Hear, hear. I love that. That has happened so many times for me on social media. I will post something and someone will say something, and I just love that back and forth. And I learn so much from people. Life is a process of learning. I mean, this podcast is about learning, is about hearing from other people and other perspectives. And I do a lot of that on social media.
So Jasmine, what's your toast to joy today?
So I'm going to not do a social media theme just because I just feel like marching to the beat of my own drum today. But my toast of joy is actually not being on social media and actually having some family time this week. So we decided for the holiday weekend, to go on a family trip. And we are all in Florida, and I get to wake up to a beautiful view. I get to get sand on literally everything with my children. I get to get my hair all crunchy because it's not, you know, the sun is beating down on it. But at the end of the day, I am getting to just spend some quality time with my kids, with my dad, with my brother. We're doing some amazing things, eating some amazing foods together. I'm having conversations with my 15-year-old son that I have been long overdue, but needed to be had. And this was a great opportunity to have them. Working out with my kids. Both of my kids are athletes. And so we've been going to the gym and, you know, I don't know. I'm just really enjoying this. And so I have actually spent very little time on social media in the last couple of days. I might post a thing here or there, but for the most part, I've been actually in the moment and with my family, and I'm really enjoying that. So that is my toast to joy, is to being in the moment.
Oh, that's a great one. I never thought about working out with my kids because my kids aren't of that age yet, but I just started the other night reading a book in bed while my daughter reads her own book in bed, which I was so excited about. Like, oh, I can read my own book and you can read your book and we can be next to each other. And I never thought about that'll be so fun when, like, we can work out together and let's go for a run together. I really enjoy it. One, I like getting older, but I also love my kids getting older. I love them now, but as they get older, I just love all the more things I can do with them.
All right. Thank you so much to everyone for joining us. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your community. We'll see you again next week on another episode of The Suburban Women Problem.
The Suburban Women Problem was created by Red, Wine, and Blue. Our executive producer is Beverly Batt. Our producer and editor is Amy Thorstenson, and our video producer is Ashley Hufford. If you're ready to be part of the Suburban Women Problem, head over to redwine.blue and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss a thing.